All right. Do you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So we are on 21B, Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. Previously in our Gemara Shir, we are discussing the concept of an ohel. That basically, right, something that constitutes widely interpreted as a tent that creates a roof. Anything under it becomes tameh due to the mace, the cadaver that is under it. So we had a machlokas last time regarding which kind of materials could constitute an ohel. And the shita of Rabbi Yehuda was that anything that's artificial automatically constitutes an ohel. But if there's like a, the wind or some natural force, water carves out a stone structure that happens to create a roofing, a natural structure would not necessarily constitute an ohel unless there's enough airspace for a fist. We said it wasn't just, my fist or your fist. It was the fist of, what was his name? Egrofosho Ben Avtiach. This Ben Avtiach fellow, apparently his fist, I think, was as big as, someone's head. So once you have that amount of airspace, then, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, even if the tent area is naturally formed, it would still constitute an ohel. So, with all of this in mind, we are now going to turn our attention back to our Mishnah. We are about a quarter way, just shy of a quarter way down Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, quarter way down 21B. We're at the words Bahare Mita. Okay. So, Vahari Mita de Yeshba Kama Egrofim. So, let's go back to the scenario of our Mishnah, in which there's a standard sukkah, kosher, chedasu, chedin, and then you have a bed. And the bed, how much air space is there between the floor and the bed? Well, Vahari Mita de Yeshba Kama Egrofim. You got enough space over there that by it's interesting that it has to say that because you would assume a mita was naturally formed, but by anyone's count, it should be good. Utsnan Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Noagim Hayinu, Sheinu Yishenim Tachas Amita Bifnei Hasakenim. And Rabbi Yehuda's Shita is that you can sleep under the bed, and it would not be mafsik, it would not be contraping. It would not be, what's the right word for it? Don't give me the English. It would not be okay. You go with the Hebrew. It would not be a separation between you and the roof. If she wants to come in, you can let her in. She'll make more noise knocking on the door. Okay. Sorry, just one moment. She right now. Okay. Okay. Thank you, everyone. So, as we, right, you can wave hi to everyone, say hi, Talia. Okay. All right. Now you can say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Love you. Oh, no? Okay. Fine. All right. As we were. So, the question is that how can Rabbi Yehuda maintain that the bed would constitute an ohel when at the same time, he's saying that the bed would not be mafsik between you and the roof of the sukkah. If it's an ohel for tumah purposes, it should be an ohel to be mafsik. You're under the bed, you're no longer under the sky. So how do we reconcile those points? Okay, so that's the question. We got the question. Is that clear? All right. So there are going to be two answers. Answer number one, shiny mita hol gava asuya. That maybe a bed is different because a bed is not meant to shelter that which is below it. A bed rather is made to provide cushioning for those who are on top of it. So even though in theory it has the right qualifications to constitute an ohel, since it's not made for the purpose of covering, it would not constitute a hefsek between you and the roof of the sukkah. However, if you remember last time, we had a case in the Mishnah, which in Parah, of course, which described how these kids who were basically made sure to be tahor from birth, how they would ride on the oxen to collect the water, which would eventually be used for the purification ceremony. And we said that the oxen constitute an ohel to be masik between any potential tumah under the ground, any graves they might walk over, and the children that are on top to keep them pure. So the Gemara asked, Shvar Nami Legabin Asuyin, if you're going to tell me that when it comes to the bed is only supporting that which is on top, it's not really functionally meant to protect that which is below, and therefore it's not an ohel, also over here as well. It, when it comes to the oxen, they shouldn't constitute an ohel. And if they're not an ohel, then that's actually a bad thing in this case, because we want them to be an ohel so that they protect the children from any tumah that is below. So what's the answer? Ki asa rabin amar rabbi Lazar shiny shvarim hol magiim al harom becham ibn yacham ibn yagishamim. Actually, oxen do protect. They're not just meant to protect that which is above them, those who are riding on them, but actually, apparently, when it's raining outside, they didn't have umbrellas back then, so the shepherds would take shelter under the oxen to protect them from the rain and to protect them from the sun. So they actually do constitute an ohel in that respect. But if, well, if you're going to accept that, ihachi mitanami hol magina al minalai usandolim shetachtaha. Well, you know, don't people put their shoes under their bed? So if you put your shoes and your sandals under your bed, even though the primary purpose of the bed is for you to sleep on it, we see that it still serves a function even for the things that are put below it. So by that, by the same token, a bed should also constitute an ohel, which would be problematic for Rabbi Yehuda. Ela Amarava, shiny shvar hol v'asui lahag abnei me'ayim shalahen. The oxen are unique because we learn from a pasuk. We saw this quoted in Tosos. Tosos quoting this Gemara when we saw it last week. That shenemar or ubasar talvisheni, that with the skin and flesh you have clothed me. Ubat samos ugidim tisochecheni, and with bones and sinews you have sheltered me. And what this teaches is, even though Tosus points out that this is a reference to a human being, but he says kol shekein behemish akresa lamata kein ohel. You know, for a human, if our flesh is like an ohel, so to speak, then certainly for an animal on all fours, it definitely constitutes an ohel. So because we kind of have a bit of a support from a pasuk that an animal will constitute an ohel, even for providing minor shade or minor protection, whereas a bed would not constitute an ohel according to Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore you could sleep under the bed and it would not be interposing. That was the term I was looking for. It would not be interposing between you and the sukkah and the schach. Okay, that's answer number one. Any questions on answer number one for Rabbi Yehuda? How a tent does not constitute an ohel for him. Answer number two, we're going to say that actually it does constitute an ohel. But there's a difference between an ohel keva, an established ohel, versus an ohel arai, a temporary, more flimsy ohel. V'baisema Rabbi Huda l'tameh, damar suka diras keva ba'inan. So Rabbi Yehuda is one. Remember, we had a long list of many different Tanaim who are of the opinion that a sukkah, to a certain degree, constitutes a diras keva. It is a established. It's an established dwelling place. So v'havale mita diras arai usuka ol keva. So let's do the math over here. A sukkah is a diras keva. It's a firm, established place. Your bed, right? Beds could be moved around from room to room. We finally just, last night, we finally moved Talia into a bed. So she's graduated, no longer cribs, no longer, there was a small point in time when there was a mattress on the floor while we were building the beds, and now she's in a proper child bed. But that's something that can be moved from room to room. So a bed, which, it, you know, if it has the canopy, it's at best an ohel arai. It's a movable, flimsy, temporary kind of ohel. So the principle is below asi ohel arai without the ohel keva. An ohel arai is not going to be able to nullify an ohel keva. Right? So if I, put an umbrella over my head right now, I'm in my apartment, I put an OL over an umbrella over my head, would you say I'm no longer sitting in my apartment right now? No, you'd say I'm sitting in my apartment and I have an umbrella over my head. It's not like the umbrella over my head is mevatel the fact that I am within my apartment. So by similar logic, yes, I'm in my bed, but I'm in my bed in the sukkah, and the actual real roof is the schach. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda would argue over here. Now, the Gemara briefly asked, Rabbi Shimon, to Amar Nami Sukdiris Keva Be'inan, Vasi Ola Rai, Mavata Ola Keva. But Rabbi Shimon, who's against Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, also holds that a sukkah is a diras keva, is a firm, established living area. Yet he says that a bed would interpose between you and the schach and would be like you're not in the sukkah. What do I make of that? Well, basically, the Gemara says they just argue on this principle. In Baha Pligi, Mar Savar Asi Ola Rai Mevato Ola Keva, Mar Savar Lo Asi Ola Rai Mevato Ola Keva. They agree on the fact. They agree on the data. They agree that a sukkah is an ohel keva, is an established living, is an established dira, and they agree that a bed is a more temporary, flimsy one. But what they basically disagree on is whether an ohel arai can nullify the fact that you are under an ohel adiras keva. So Rabbi Huda says it is not mevatel. Therefore, hanging out under the bed would not be problematic. You'd be considered like you're still in the sukkah. Raishu would say, true, it's a diras arai, but it's enough to interpose between you and the sukkah. And that brings us to the next Mishnah. Let me pause and take any potential questions that we may have at the time.
Got a question.
Yes, Zadie, great to see you.
Great to see you.
Great to see you all.
Yes, and your mother will be seeing you tomorrow.
Yes, we're looking forward to having her for Shabbos, God willing. We'll take
I have in mind these tents that are put up by governments to create hospitals, housing for refugees, other purposes. How would we categorize that as an ohel?
Yeah. So this is an interesting question, Zay, that you're asking, which is when we talk about sukkah as a diras arai versus a diras keva, if it's established or not, we had different ways of defining it. We talked about this toward the beginning of the Masechta as well. Do we define keva as the material of the walls? Do we define keva as the amount of time that it is standing up for? Do we base keva on its dimensions? So when we had that whole long list, I'm forgetting which daf it was on, maybe someone could remind me, in which we said, like, I forgot, it was like five or six Tanayim. They each held that a sukkah is a diras keva. Even though they defined sukkah as diras keva, they had different opinions on how that was expressed, how that's manifested. So I think, talking about a tent that's set up like ad hoc for refugees, it depends. Are you looking at the structure? Are you looking at dimensions? Are you looking at how long it's going to be, the duration it's going to be up for? So those would be different considerations. Vis-a-vis Hilchos Tumah Tahara, when it comes to a mace, I believe that would be sufficient enough to transfer Tumas mace if there is a dead body there, if that's what you're asking, for Kohanic purposes. So don't go to any refugee tents anytime soon. God willing, everyone should be safe, but if that's halacha lemaisa, then there's your answer. Okay, moving on to the next Mishnah. God willing, we're actually going to do two Mishnahs tonight. Hasomech sukaso bikroi hamita. Share. Let me. Okay, I can explain this without the picture book. Does Art Scroll give you pictures? You get them in the Art Scroll? All right, they don't. Okay, I have it in my Masifta Gemara, but it's. You know what? My Masifta Gemara is in my Shtender at Shul. So I will explain what it looks like, and hopefully we can visualize. Right? Everyone who learned Gemara before before the 20th century had to figure out how to visualize these things without a fancy color picture book. So I think we're capable of doing it also. So here we go. Hamita. Someone who uses the legs and the frame of a bed to hold up the sukkah, so like kind of like remove the canopy, use the frame of it, and you put up your schach. So That would be kosher. Rabbi Huda Omer, im eino yichol lamo b'fnei atzma psula. Rabbi Huda says that if you're depending on the actual frame of the bed, not just to create walls, but to actually directly support the schach, then the sukkah would not be kosher. Now you might be wondering, which is literally what the Gemara is going to ask, my time at Rabbi Yehuda. What does Rabbi Yehuda have against bed frames? So there's two possibilities as to what issue Rabbi Yehuda identified with using a bed frame to support the schach. Opinion number one. So
talking about a four poster where the legs go up above the bed and hold the canopy? They could hold up the sukkah.
Yeah. So Rashi says Bikrei Hamita. He says Mita Shlema, full bed. So I guess you're kind of just removing the canopy, and I guess presumably you have some walls around there as well. But you're basically using otherwise the whole structure of the bed. That's what it seems to be. So yeah, you're not using canopy, you're using schach. So there's two possibilities here. Pligiva Rabbi Zeir Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo. Chad Amar Bimesha in La Keva. Coming back to what we just learned in the Gemara we just learned actually flows very nicely into this Gemara. You don't always get that, but it worked out over here. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda's issue is, what did we literally just learn about Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara beforehand? Remember, Rabbi Yehuda is a proponent of a sukkah being a diras keva, an established structure. So maybe using the frame of a bed, which we literally just explained in the previous Gemara, is not an established structure. It's a diras arai, it's an ohel arai. So that is not good enough for a sukkah, according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's Rabbi Yehuda l'shitaso. Rabbi Yehuda is consistent. You need a diras keva. V'chad amar b'nei shemami deha b'davar makabel toma. This is an important concept. You want to remember this one. The other issue is that maybe the schach should not be resting on a maimid, on something, even the thing that's supporting the schach should also be, in theory, kosher to be schach. It should not be mekabel tuma. Not say kosher for schach, but it should not be mekabel tuma. Remember, one of the qualifications of schach is that it's not susceptible to becoming ritually impure, to absorbing tuma. So maybe, maybe Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, we don't paskin this way, but there are many who are machmir for this, that maybe the maimid, the whatever material you're using to hold up the schach, has to be made from material that cannot become tame. So that's why you'll see many people who make a sukkah, let's say out of metal beams, right? You know, the Lego sukkahs, you kind of just put, not literally like, but you know, the snap sukkahs that you put together. So you have the frame, and then they'll put boards of wood on top and then rest the schach on the boards of wood. That way the maimid, the material holding up the schach, is also a material that in theory would be kosher for the schach. Again, we don't paskin that way, me'ikar hadin, but it's definitely a chumra that many observe. So maybe that's Rabbi Yehuda's problem here, which is that the bed is mekabel tuma, and so the bed should not be used to support the schach. So, okay, I see there's two explanations for what Rabbi Yehuda has against bed frames, but what's the difference? What's the nafkamina between these two explanations? Might be nahu. So let's say we change the case a little bit. You take these nice beams of metal, of iron, you stick them into the ground, you hammer them down, and then you put schach on top of them. If your issue before with the bed was the bed is this movable, non-permanent structure, well, now you just chiseled those metal beams into the ground. That's a diras keva. That should solve everything. But if your issue was that you're not supposed to put the schach on a maimid that is susceptible to tuma, metal bars are able to be, they're susceptible to tuma. And so that would not solve your problem. So that would be the nafkamina between the two explanations in Rabbi Yehuda, whether banging in strong metal beams into the ground also would be an issue to put schach on them. Toby.
Rabbi, forgive me, but I'm confused. I'm looking here in the art scroll, footnote number 26 for anybody who's got it.
Yes, read it for us, please.
It says a wooden bed is susceptible to tuma. So I'm confused with wood. I mean,
Oh,
if a
right.
wooden bed is susceptible to, then how can you use the wooden boards?
So, I mean, I think the issue is when you turn into a kli, that's when it becomes a problem. That footnote, just for context, that's going on which part? That's in reference to which part of the Gemara?
Let me just see.
I could go into my living room and get mine off the shelf if I could look inside
Wait,
with you.
one second, one second, one second, one second.
Okay.
It's attached to, and one says that Rabbi Yehuda invalidates it because he holds up the sock with something susceptible to tuma. So how can it be? If is wood susceptible to tuma or not?
Think
I'm
if it,
confused.
I think if it's made as a kli, remember we talked about, like, in the past, like arrow shafts, right? So arrow shafts are made of wood generally. But the idea was that once when you have a bunch of sticks that are just sticks from the ground, those are not susceptible to tuma. But once you turn it into a kli, it is. Like, remember we talked about the mats? Remember, like, not bam the Gemara wasn't talking about bamboo, but you could think of it as like bamboo mats. So remember, we had this whole discussion recently about if the mat was made for the purpose of reclining on it.
Sleeping. Yeah.
So the point is that a regular bar of wood would not be makabel tuma, but once you turn to a kli, like making it, for instance, into a a bed
Oh,
frame
okay.
out of it,
All
then
right.
it would be
Okay.
makabel tuma. Yeah. Okay, but
Okay.
thank you.
Thank
I'm
you.
glad we could clarify that point. That's very
Thank
good.
you.
Absolutely. Okay, so any other questions before we wrap up this Gemara? All right, let's wrap it up, my friends. Amar Rabbaye, Lo Shanu Ella Samach, Avosir Al Gavamita Ksheira. So again, I'm going to try to visualize over here what's happening. So if you use, instead of using the actual bed frame to hold it up, you kind of have to imagine using like the bed frame to create the structure of the sukkah, but you're not actually putting the schach on the bed frame itself. You're putting like these pegs up here, which are independently holding the schach up, independent of the bed. So in a case like that, ksheira, it would be okay. My taima, so lamad amar lefisha ein la keva, hare yesh la keva. If your concern is that you need an established structure, we have a robust established structure. And if the issue is putting on something that's makabel tuma, so if you put it on materials that are not makabel tuma, then it is kosher. Okay, very good. Now, let's go a little further, and I don't say I promise, but let's move on to the next Mishnah, right? Let's get a little bit into Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. Wow, look at all these Mishnayos recovering rapid speed at this point. I think in Perek Beis we hit a lot of Mishnayos really fast in general, right? Chaf Beis Amud Beis, I see a Mishnah, I see two Mishnayos actually, and then on Chaf Dalet Amud Beis. Right, we won't be able to go like 2 3 weeks without a Mishnah at a certain point. So this is exciting stuff. Good for me, who has a lower attention span. So the Mishnah says Sukkah Hameduvleles. We don't know what that word means yet, by the way. Rashi says L'kamon Mefarshal B'Gemara. So if you don't know what the word Meduvleles means, you're not supposed to know what it means yet. So don't worry. Ushitzilusa And when a sukkah is has more shade, provides more shade than sunlight, and allows sunlight to come through, it is kosher. Then, we're not going to talk about this right now, but Zadie, this is something I think you brought up a few shiurim ago. Hamu'uva kamin bayis, if you make the roof, you put so much schach on, it's so thick, it's like the roof of your house. Again, roofing your house in the sense that there's no space between the beam, not the beams, but the branches of schach. Even though you cannot see the stars between them, it would still be a kosher sukkah nonetheless. We'll talk about more about the seif of the Mishnah later, but let's analyze the resha, the beginning of the Mishnah, and with this we'll conclude tonight. My Meduvleles. What is this really funny word, Meduvleles? It's even hard to pronounce. Maybe I'm mispronouncing it. Amarav, Sukkah Ania. It is a poor sukkah, right? You can imagine this is like a personification of like the little train that could or something. It's a poor sukkah. What's a poor sukkah mean? Does it mean that it can't afford yeshiva day school tuition? What it means is sheish b'schacha kanim ma'at. It has not a lot of schach. V'yeshba avir harbe el she'im bo shlosha b'yachad. So yep. So remember we learned, this is Rashi I just read, by the way, in case you're not seeing it. So remember, we said, what is the amount of air gap in a sukkah that it takes to disqualify a sukkah? Three tefachim ver. So basically, you got to think like, here's some schach, then 2.5 airspace, another beam of schach, another 2.5 airspace. So that's the kind of sukkah we're dealing with. That's what meduvleles means. Ushmul amar, kana olav kana yored. That the branches of the schach are not on the same y-axis. There's one here, so they kind of go along the full x-axis, but the y-axis, they're all on different levels vertically. So, okay, what do we make of this? Rav Tani Chada, Ushmul Tani Tarti. So for Rav, the way you have to read the first line of the Mishnah is that it's describing one sukkah, whereas Shmuel understands the first line of the Mishnah as describing two distinct sukkahs. And what do we mean by that? Rav Tani Chada, sukkah meduvleles, my meduvleles. What's meduvleles mean? Meduldeles, like dal. Like, again, it's like a lashon of being poor and downtrodden. Shetzilasa meruba mechamasa ksheira. That even if you have a sukkah that's lacking a lot of branches, but so long as it has enough that you are getting 51% shade from it, then it is still a kosher sukkah. So the way you would read the Mishnah according to Rav is, if you look at the beginning of the Mishnah, sukkah hameduvleles ushetzi lusa mirubecha masa ksheira. A sukkah meduvleles. And what is a sukkah meduvleles? One, that it provides still more shade than sunlight. That would be kosher. Whereas Ushmuel tani tarti, Shmuel understands that you need to have a nice comma over there. My meduvleles, mubulbeles, like to be discombobulated. Utarti katani. There's two things going on here. Sukkah mubulbeles, kishera. Ushetzi lusa rechamasa, kishera. So the first case in the Mishnah is referring to kana ola kana yored, where you have the schach all on different levels, but they're all along the x-axis, but the y-axis is where they are jumping up and down. And then the second part of the second line, Ushetzi lusa rebbe mechamasa, is referring to what Rav says it's referring to, which is a sukkah ania, which is a sukkah that doesn't have an air gap of three tefachim between the beams and just barely is able to croak out a majority of shade to sunlight. What's unique, and I think we'll talk about this more next time, is that according to Shmuel, and you look at Rashi, Rashi explains it as such, that even if there is practically more sun than there is shade in your sukkah, because kana ola kana yored, since they are all following along the x-axis, we kind of view them as if they're all next to each other. So even if literally, functionally, you're not getting majority of shade from them, it would still be kosher nonetheless. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah, according to Shmuel. But don't worry, God willing, we will talk about this in greater detail next week. Yirtzeh Hashem Yisparach. Any questions before we conclude, my friends? All right. Wonderful learning together. And I'm back for Shabbos. And as my grandfather said, God willing, my mother will be joining us for Shabbos as well. Okay. Take care, everyone. Have a wonderful Shabbos. A good night to all.
Shabbos.
Thank you. Shabbat.